Okay. I'd like to thank very much the organizer for the opportunity to speak. I would like to present a problem in quantum groups that was found in the context of integrability in the ADS-CFT correspondence. And so it's an old problem, but actually in the last year and a half there has been a revival because the same phenomenon has been observed in other sectors. So there has been a renewed interest, but nevertheless, let me take it a little bit from far. So let me just, this is a list of my past and current collaborators, and let me also advertise the reviews that I've written. In the meanwhile, where you can find a lot about the spectral problem. So what I'm going to do is do a quick review of how of algebra are used in the scattering problem. We just heard a fascinating talk on of algebra in symbols, and I would love to have at the end some connections. But let me really briefly go over that, also because I'm speaking to an audience of absolute experts, so I won't spend too much time on that. And also we heard another fascinating talk about Jungians in amplitudes, which also opens up the possibility of beautiful connections, so I will briefly review a bit the Jungian in the scattering problem. And then I'll get to this secret symmetry, which was originally observed in the spectrum, and then it's been observed in several places a little bit unexpectedly. One was the amplitudes, then pure spinors, boundary problems, and then with Marius and Vidas in January we did the Q deformation. And the middle three is things that I haven't worked on directly, so you have to bear with me. I've tried to do my best. Let me super quickly have a survey of exact S matrices, because this will be the main topic, at least for the first part. So let me just tell you the things that the properties of exact S matrices that are used for the Opf algebra. And somehow it would be nice to make a connection also with the previous talk. I didn't have a chance of asking a question in the discussion, but I'd like to make a point. So let me take a two-dimensional integrable massive field theory, and we have in mind, of course, the worksheet theory, and I'll like to refer to this review of Patrick Dory and also the review foundations of Gleb and Sergei for what I'll say in the first part. We all know that we have integrability that says that implies that there will be no particle production and annihilation. The sets of momenta initial and final will be the same, just reshuffled, and the full S matrix will factorize into subsequent two-body scatterings. So the true object we really need to study is the two-by-two body process. So I'll denote this with this diagram, and let me assume relativistic invariance for the moment because the formulas are more beautiful. I can write everything in terms of a rapidity, which you can think on these graphs as some kind of hyperbolic angle. The S matrix depend on this angle. We require unitarity as a first thing. You do a scattering and you undo it by taking a 2 pi minus x. This is like doing nothing, and this is the algebraic relation, which will have an Opf algebra interpretation. Then we require crossing symmetry, which means that you can read the diagram in two channels. If you read it this way, you see that you have an angle I pi minus x, but you also bring a particle which was in the future, you read it as if it were in the past, so you have to conjugate it. And here I would like to make a super rapid comment. It reminds me, so the previous speaker said that the antipode doesn't feature too much in this symbol, but all these relations, logarithm of 1 over z, remind to me a lot about antipode or crossing symmetry relations. So I really leave it like that. It would be nice. Or perhaps, I don't know, I wonder if anybody has considered to recast those relations as antipode relations instead of coproduct. Could be more natural. In other contexts in this community, we know that the antipode sometimes acts as 1 over x plus minus. So it could be nice to have something like that. Maybe it will make it, I don't know, more compact or so, but it's really a fascinating thing. Then we have a Jahn-Baxter equation. I don't need to explain it. Just make sense of the factorization of three particle. And then let me say something which sometimes is a little bit overlooked. It's been, there has been discussion about bootstrap in other contexts, but for the exact S matrix, this is somehow the bootstrap idea. So suppose you have a bound state of two fundamental particles, this big blob here, and it lives in the asymptotic Fock space of your theory. It can scatter with the third particle, and again, integrability allows you to bring down a line. So if you know the angle at which these two form a bound state, there is some sort of mass triangle that fixes the complete trigonometry, and you, the S matrix of the bound state with the third fundamental just factorizes into two. You bring down the line, you have two subsequent scattering at these particular angles, which are all fixed. So this is interesting from the off-algebra point of view, because, as I will motivate, it's just slightly a little bit more fundamental than Jahn-Baxter itself. Right, so why am I saying that everything is nicely rewritten in terms of off-algebra? We have just learned all the maps and properties of off-algebra. Let me just point out where they feature in the scattering problem. So what we have here, and I'm not sure if it is the same in symbols, it's because the product is somehow abelian, if I understand correctly. But here we have an R matrix, which basically goes from the tensor product of two representation of a certain symmetry algebra, which for us would be a superalgebra, into itself. It scatters these two. And the coproduct in the scattering theory is understood as the action of the symmetry on two particle state. Let's fix, for instance, that it acts on incoming state. And now, since we have a Lie algebra instead of just this shuffle or this pointwise product, then the compatibility is with the Lie bracket. So we need to have a Lie algebra homomorphism of the... So the coproduct should be a Lie algebra homomorphism. The fundamental relation that the R matrix needs to satisfy is this one. So if you act with the symmetry on incoming state first and then scatter, it should be the same as first scatter and then act on the with the symmetry on outgoing state, but you have to do, you have to swap them because they emerge in this way. And this is done by defining this opposite coproduct, which is just the graded, if you have superalgebra, permutation composed with the coproduct. This defines the R matrix algebraically. The typical coproduct that one needs, for example, in quantum mechanics is this local one. So you have a symmetry that acts on two particle states. It acts on the first and nothing on the second. Nothing on the first, something on the second. Somehow the old business of quantum groups is when you start to deform in these coproducts. So you get non-trivial conditions, for example, in the R matrix. And we just learned that the Hopf algebra is this with some other maps all put together, list of axioms, most of which for physics are quite obvious and natural, but nevertheless you need them for mathematical consistency. And the Youngian is just an example of Hopf algebra, which is infinite dimensional. Yes, and these are some of my favorite books. This is a dictionary between the physicist intuition of scattering and the Hopf algebra interpretation. I just want to flash this again because there's absolute experts in the audience. This crossing relation translates into a relation where the antipode, the sigma, acts on the R matrix itself, for example, the inverse of it, if it exists. It acts on one particle and gives you the conjugate representation. And you get the R minus one because at some point you have to use unitarity to put this, for example, you see it's anti-2-1, here it would be 1 anti-2, and you do R minus one. Jahn-Baxter is just Jahn-Baxter. Bootstrap, it's this. You see, it's a relation in the triple tensor product, and on one factor, I act with the coproduct. Why does it have anything to do with the bound state? The coproduct tensors two representations, and the way you look for bound state is irreducible components in a tensor product of two representations. So it's natural that the coproduct takes you 1 and 2 and somehow looks for a bound state in the irreducible decomposition. And this is just the product understood in the triple tensor product of these three representations. So everything has these relations have an interpretation in terms of algebra. How does this feature in ADS-CFT, again, this is very early days. So let me just say that what I will need, I will start from the spin chain picture. So once you choose a vacuum, it takes you from this full superconformal algebra to this PSU2/2, which will be the algebra we will be mostly interested in. It has these two bosonic and two fermionic degrees of freedom. And an important feature is it, which will be sort of recurrent in the talk, it has vanishing killing form. It's one of this algebra of these families, which were studied by Zarembo in connection with the vanishing of the Vita functions in terms of string backgrounds. And it's one particular element of this family of these algebras classified by Katz. But it's so special because, as it was noticed in this paper, it's the only member of the family that admits a huge central extension and also a huge automorphism group. And this was really fundamental because Niklas Beiser constructed this representation and used that algebra to accommodate also momentum and energy for the excitations, Magnon excitations of the ADS-CFT spin chain. So once again, this is so well known. Just let me just flash this representation. I want to use this formulation by Gleb and Sergei because it automatically encompasses all the symmetric bound state representation, the short symmetric representations of this algebra in terms of a polynomial in a certain number of bosonic and a restricted number of Grassmann variables, and the generators are realized in terms of differential operators in terms of these variables, and these are the central element. Where is the op algebra? Let me just present it in a way that you might have not seen before, although I get inspiration by these papers of Charles and Comets Hernandez. So I think it's, let me go to a Chevalier-Serre decomposition. So let me choose a Borel decomposition of this algebra and present it in this way. Let me choose three positive and three negative roots, all fermionic. So I'm in the diagram cross, cross, cross. And let me do this rescaling with some parameter q, a silly parameter which goes to x I half. It doesn't have particular meaning, but I don't want to use the coupling constant. I have fixed the coupling constant to some number because I'm not interested in any limit. So I just say coupling constant to 1, I get this factor. With this rescaling, now everything is controlled by the Cartan matrix, and it has this thing, but it doesn't matter, it's just because of the rescaling, otherwise it's purely numerical. And this is the Chevalier-Serre presentation of this algebra. You have a Cartan subalgebra with three guys. The Cartan matrix appears here. This, the plus and minus give you the Cartan. This would be the Serre relation. So for the Serre relation basically tells you that you start commuting positive, positive, positive. At some point it needs to end because the algebra is finite dimensional. So if I do it for these pairs, I get nothing new. This, all this here is standardly superalgebra. The only place where the central extension appears is here. And now you see why I did this funny rescaling. Because, so for the 2 and 3, it seems like what you would get for a quantum group. But the only point is that it's not here, but it's in the Serre relation. So the central extension deforms the Serre relation in a form that it's maybe an optical illusion, but it looks a little bit like a quantum group. This P is a central element. And now you see why I didn't want Q, for example, e to the ig. It's because the undeformed case is not Q to 1, as in quantum groups, where here you want to recover the Cartan subalgebra, is P to 0. So you want to have Q finite and P to 0. So you get 0 for the undeformed algebra. Another advantage I want to stress is that if I do it this way, basically I've already used the constraint that the central charges are e to the ip minus 1 or e to the minus ip minus 1. If you do it this way, and you impose that this as a trivial coproduct, as it should be, because central elements need to be co-commutative, otherwise they don't commute with the R matrix, they don't satisfy this defining relation. If you fix this, exactly the same way as if you fix the trivial coproduct for a Cartan subalgebra, it gives you quantum group coproduct. Same thing here. Fixing this automatically implies this coproduct, this deformation of the coproduct for the supercharges. And after a non-local transformation, it recovers the standard coproduct. All right, let me not dwell too much on this. It's just a curiosity because I really want to move to Jungians. So we have seen in the first talk of the morning, Jungians. Let me just again flash very quickly how Jungian appear in the spectral problem. You have an algebra, Lie algebra, and then you have a Q hat that satisfies this relation plus extra set of relations that control the growth of the algebra that you get, and this is the coproduct as written by Drinfeld, and you can find everything about it in Neil's review. So Jungians have a long story in the integrability business in ADS-CFT. On the two ends of the perturbative spectrum, they were studied by lots of authors, but somehow I will be interested in an exact Jungian, which is the Jungian of the exact S-matrix, which was found by Niklas Beisert. And now, as you can see, since the coproduct has to be an algebra homomorphism, it has to respect these. So whatever modification you do here, it will be inherited by the coproduct at the level 1. And so since now I kept doing this rescaling, now I have this kind of coproduct for the Lie algebra with some quantum number that depends if this is a... So this is a generic letter for a generator, could be bosonic, fermionic, depends what I put here. Correspondingly, there is a coproduct for the Jungian, which carries over all these deformations. Let me skip, it's a very interesting piece of work, how actually you can find this coproduct arising semi-classically from the expression of the non-local charges. And again, it can be found in papers of Neil and also Lusher and Palmyre. I always found it very fascinating, but let me just move on to discuss some special features of this exact Jungian, which already gives some hint of the secret symmetry. So first of all, I have to tell you the representation in which this Jungian lives to be a symmetry of the S matrix. It's one evaluation representation with some spectral parameter U, which, however, depends in a non-trivial way on the parameters that parameterize the algebra itself, these x plus minus. And this is because you want a center, so you have also central elements at the Jungian level. They still need to be co-commutative, otherwise the R matrix doesn't make sense. That imposes a relation between U and the Lie algebra representation. This also spoils a nice thing that one expects from Jungian symmetry in the S matrix in the evaluation representation. It does not depend on the difference because, I mean, it does, but U depends on X plus minus, so everything is invisible at the very end. So this somehow hides the manifest dependence of the S matrix on the difference of the spectral parameters. Also, another problem is that technically, since we saw that the Killing form is zero, it's not possible to raise and lower the indices of the structure constant to have the dual ones that define the coproduct. Nevertheless, Niklas gave a complete list of coproducts, which are symmetries, so one has to sort of find an algebraic way to accommodate it, which is, it cannot be this compact writing in terms of F dual. But also it's a connection with something I didn't have time to discuss, which is connection with these automorphisms that it was explored. And also let me say that in a lot of work, including work on the boundary and then in the bulk, Jungian symmetry can be a substitute for Jung-Baxter equation to fix the complete S matrix. Now, let me take the opportunity to advertise Drinfeld's second realization, also because there are so many experts in amplitudes, and I would really love to see a use of it in amplitudes, because I think it's a very beautiful representation. So let me just describe what I think is a very efficient way of describing a Jungian. It was given by Drinfeld, and as we saw, the first realization is implicit. You have level 0 and 1, you start commuting, you impose several relations, so Every time you have to see what happens, you have to constrain the growth. This is given completely in terms of generators label by an integer n, so it solves the recursion completely, and these are the whole set of defining relations that you need. Of course, you have to choose a Borel polarization, so you have to go to some Cartan subalgebra. Now you have a tower of them commuting. The zero element, so the zero of this is isomorphic to the Lie algebra you started with. It still gives you the Cartan matrix. The positive and negative, they sum the levels, so that's fine. Then let me jump to these ones. This is the natural generalization of the Serre relation. You just need to take arbitrary levels and symmetrize on the case. No big deal. It's still controlled by these integers, because this you can go to a basis where it's integer. It's controlled everything by the Cartan matrix. These two relations have no analog at level zero, because as you can see, there is a shift. So even if you put all integers, these are positive integers, 0, 1, 2. If you put them all to 0, it still gives you 1. So here is the seed, how you generate the Jungian from level 0 and 1. And let me show you something that I always find very nice. How do I mechanically generate every level starting from 0 and 1? I use that. So let me start again from the Cartan subalgebra. And this will be important. The level 0 with plus minus gives just Cartan matrix AI and Xi plus minus. And this one, let me use this relation here, which was the third or fourth one, this one. Now, suppose you find, and you will, some ij specific, such that the entry ij of the Cartan matrix is non-zero. Then I use those I and j, and I put m to 0 and n to 1 in this relation. So this shouldn't be there, sorry. So I get kappa 1 psi plus minus 1. These I know because I assume I know the full level 0 and 1. Minus kappa 0 psi 2. And here I get something. By the way, this is the wrong statistics. It's one feature of the Drinfeld second realization. If you expect a commutator, you get an anti-commutator. For superalgebra, if you expect anti, you get com. But you know everything. It's 0 and 1. Now, this bracket can be undone by this. So I get xi2. Now, bring to the other side. Xi2 is completely determined, but it's not implicit. I like it because it's completely explicit. It's mechanical. I know these, I just take commutator and so forth, and I find Xi2. And as you can imagine, you get them all just by explicit formula. Right, let me not just stay too much on that. This is one feature why I think sometimes that it would be nice for people working in amplitudes, because maybe it could give explicit formula for Jungian generators at level n at arbitrary order. This is the phase of the Jungian in Drinfeld second realization for the ADS-CFT case. It's the same. Let me carry on this funny rescaling. So now I have two matrices, one purely numerical that I need, and the other one with this funny Q minus 1. And it looks again the same. And again, let me call it H-bar, because it's terribly reminiscent of how you reinstate a scale in the Jungian, and it appears here. The only thing, so this would be, again, completely standard. The only case where the central extension appears is here. And now you get a tower of them. And they all need to be co-commutative. This fixes everything. And again, the level zero is this funny combination. Again, let me advertise that once you have algebra, then you can try to solve this relation completely. This is called the universal R matrix. It is independent on representation, and the Jungian, the standard one, admits a universal R matrix. Basically, you find the S matrix completely in terms of algebra generators. And now you can see that from the physicist's point of view, this theorem is very nice because it puts bootstrap just slightly a little bit more fundamental than anything else. If you have bootstrap, which is this, then Jahn-Baxter and crossing follow. I find it nice that somehow it's this quasi-triangularity. So this condition actually mathematically implies these other two. Let me again throw an advertisement to people studying correlation functions, because actually once you have the universal R matrix, there are very powerful techniques, Leclerc and Smirnov, for instance, and also I'm happy that David Fioravanti is in the audience, because they developed a lot of mathematical construction to study complete symmetries of integrable systems, so I'll refer to him. You can define an integrable model purely by its quantum group theoretical context content and the universal R matrix, and including the correlation functions, which I don't understand to the very end of that point, but they appear as braiding relation of fields, which are nothing else than infinite dimensional representation of the quantum group. So in principle, you can fix also the correlation function in terms of universal R matrix. How you concretely do that may be another question. And also, there is this other approach of the Q operator, which must be, and it surely is, connected. I'm approaching to the secret symmetry. So a lot of work has been done to explore this algebra and to see if the universal R matrix can be found, and it can't so far. And this is because there's something missing. So the Jungian that I showed before, the one in Drinfeld's second realization, although it is fully consistent and it avoids the problem, at least superficially, of using the Killing form, because you can, again, just give the coproduct in terms of the Cartan matrix, it's not complete. And if you study, for example, long representation, you see that something else needed to be added. This was already manifest from work of Fabian and Niklas. You need to somehow find a way to accommodate these automorphisms. And this secret symmetry somehow, I think, stays at the core of the problem. It is sort of a bridge between the automorphisms and the realizations that we see in the S matrix. So there is this extra Jungian generator. I call it B-hat because it has this coproduct. This would be the coproduct that an algebra GL2/2 would have, with this being the hypercharge, the non-supertraceless element. It has an antipode in this representation. So it's this non-supertraceless guy. It doesn't sit in SL. It sits in GL, but at level zero is not there. It appears just by brute force computation, or, as I will motivate, by a mathematical consistency argument, at level one. Once again, here G has reappeared, but I could have put it to one. This is exact formula. It's just a Jungian level one coproduct. Let me briefly say show how the universal R matrix should look like, and it does look like for Jungians, the ordinary ones. And this will motivate why we started looking for the secret symmetry in the first place. The universal R matrix, I said it solves the coproduct relation universally, but you have a price to pay. It looks quite complicated. You have to construct, here I show only the Cartan part. It's decomposed naturally, Gauss decomposition into positive, negative, and Cartan generators. You have to construct some Drinfeld currents. But at the end of the day, you only use the generator in Drinfeld's second realization. So it's completely algebraic. You can plug in any representation you want. It will spit out a specific matrix. And, well, you need to just to take some residual derivative with respect to some auxiliary variables. The point that I want to stress is that here, no matter how complicated the formula is, you will need at some point to invert some operator, so this T translates the spectral parameter by one unit. Aij, nevertheless, is still the Cartan matrix, and you'll have to invert it. So there is a problem in using this formula, which was found by Koroshkin and Tolstoy, and then refined by Adam and Fabian. And it is that you eventually need to invert the Cartan matrix, and I haven't told you, but it was clear that the Cartan matrix of PSL2/2 is degenerate. So what do you do in that case? Once you have the degenerate Cartan matrix, here is just a more compact form of the R matrix. These factors are a little bit more easier to deal. They're just positive tensor negative roots. These are the set of positive roots of the algebra. Here is the source of all troubles. You cannot invert this, but the Russian mathematicians tell you what to do. You go to the next non-degenerate one, which in this case is GL2/2. That's why in the Cartan subalgebra you expect naturally to have B, because B would sit in here, so it has somehow to appear, and if it appears here, it is a symmetry, so it has to have some coproduct. On the other hand, it cannot appear at level zero, because if you give it, the only thing you could possibly give a level zero B is this trivial coproduct, because it sits in the Cartan subalgebra, with this matrix representation. But we know that there are processes in the S matrix that sends two scalars into two fermions and vice versa, and B somehow counts if you have fermions, so this violates this simple symmetry. That's why it needs to be there for mathematical consistency, but it cannot be there at level zero. It starts from one. That's why we could only find it looking for it and trying to giving it the most natural coproduct. This sort of indentation, you have a PSU2/2 which promotes to a Youngian, and then at level 1 it starts as a GL with no level 0, could be perhaps, word of experts, a new type of quantum groups. How much time do I have? I lost track actually. 7 minutes. Okay, thank you. So now let me briefly give a review of things I actually know much less than people in the audience, but somehow this was, you might have thought it's a mathematical curiosity, it arises in the spectral problem. After all, you need to go to a vacuum, break a symmetry, central extension, so it may be something very interesting but confined to the spectral problem. So it was really revealing when Niklas Beyers-Zert and Burkhard Schwab found the same sort of phenomenon in amplitudes. So we've heard a lot about amplitude, so I won't spend any more words on that. Let me just say quickly that there you have the Youngian of PSU2/4, and still you have an element of this class. It's just the 4/4 element. So again, these authors found that there is a symmetry which is not there at level zero, because it would count the helicity and the amplitudes are helicity violating. So, but it appears at level 1, that's why it's this B hat. In the context of amplitudes, now you have the amplitudes, and the Youngian is realized by this nested sum that runs on this, I keep thinking about it as a chain, but somehow it runs in this nested form with the bilinear of the generators. And there's one particular bilinear, which is a symmetry. It kills the amplitudes, and it's exactly the same way as you would expect. Now in GL4/4, so it's bilinear in supersymmetry generator with the appropriate alpha-alpha dot indices and in this combination. And of course they check that it's consistent with cyclicity, and it also has a form when you have this conformal anomaly, you can correct it in a form that restores that. So it goes again as the story that was described in the first talk, but again, it's there, and it starts from level zero. So very interesting. Other people found it in other contexts. So there is this other formulation, which is the pure spinner formulation, which is closer to what I was describing before in terms of the worksheet. Well, I didn't really have time to describe in terms of Lux connection. You have some current, you construct some other current, you construct the Lux connection dependent on a spectral parameter. You generate all the non-local charges by a transfer matrix, which has this standard form, and this is the form of the non-local charges. So somehow, Berkowitz and Mikhailov argued that actually this one, which would be the first non-local charge from the point of view of the Youngian as realized on the worksheet, takes values in PU2/4. Therefore, in order to extract some physical quantity, you need to super trace it with a Xi variable. That Xi variable will need to have a GL component. Otherwise, the super trace with the identity will be zero. So, if this is an element which is in PU, so it has an identity, the Xi has a GL, has a non-super traceless part, and that's how they argue that this knows about the secret symmetry. So the whatever meaning this Xi has in the end, it lives in U now, in GL or U224. So it's a little bit more indirect argument, but they say that this is the way in their formalism to think about the secret symmetry. More was found on the boundary. And I would like to refer to the poster by Vidas, where this is, not this, but a lot of the boundary and also of the coup deformation is explained, and also to the poster of Takuya, I forgot to say, where more realizations of the Jungian are given. So in the boundary you have now something different. You have an algebra in the bulk and something preserved on the boundary. There is an automorphism, an involution that you can use to decompose this into a symmetric pair. You end up with a twisted Jungian. So I refer just for briefness to these works. And again, you have to deform the Jungian level 1 by this amount in order to have a co-ideal subalgebra. So in the second factor you have this, which is this twisted Jungian. And Vidas has found a lot of examples where there is a secret symmetry there. And actually, if I'm correct, I scanned somehow his findings, and it seems that it always happens again where the boundary algebra has a degenerate Cartan matrix. So it's again this recurrent theme. As soon as you have a degenerate Cartan matrix, you obtain a secret symmetry. And also there are some other examples of secret supercharges, but I have no time to talk about that. And probably we found in this paper that there is also a secret symmetry in the Q-deformed case. It's much more complicated, but this is its form. It's exactly the same thing. This is the quantum affine version. And since I really love Drinfeld second realization, let me just flash that this is Drinfeld second realization for a quantum affine algebra. So I think we're dreaming to get this for the quantum deform ADS-CFT, which is relevant for the Pohlmeier reduction. So just to conclude, I had to rush a bit through this beautiful, I believe, mathematical structure, which, again, it seems very reminiscent of things that are known, but it has something which is completely new and it cannot be accommodated, and it can have relations with several other features of these Jungians, including, for instance, non-ultralocality, which Mark is going to talk about. And it would be nice to have relations with all these other approaches and find more Pohlmeier reduction. And of course, I would love to make connections with what we heard before for symbols. And thank you.
Any questions?
So we know that in GL2/2 case, coupling constant is comes from the central charges.
GL2?
GL2/2. I mean, coupling constant of integrable of two Priang-Mills. It comes in terms of central charges. But in GL4/4, there is no central extension.
Right.
Of the similar kind. Can you say that coupling constant can come through this additional generator? So the point, can you imagine a representation of your Jungian which contains coupling constant as a parameter? Can it come from this generator?
It's an interesting question. I haven't thought about it in that way, because for me the coupling constant is really something that parameterizes a representation. It never really plays an algebraic role.
No, but the point that it parameterizes only is the case of GL2/2. But true algebra is GL4/4. And there is no way to do this, as far as I know.
In a way, it deforms. So, as we saw for the amplitudes, for example, the way they are realized, the more you go on with loops, the further you go with loops, which somehow is controlled by the coupling constant, you get a more complicated representation of the same algebra. So, you could probably rephrase the same in terms of the standard Jungian without referring to the secret symmetry, just saying that you just need to go to a more elaborated representation of the algebra, as as you include more and more loops. So in this way, I wouldn't see a difference as anything special for the secret symmetry. But I might be wrong. I admit I should think more about
Let me just add on that there is no central extension for GL4/4, but for GL2/2 there is. But if you don't insist on the word central, then you can do many things. It's just going to be more complicated.
Okay, any other questions?